Welcome to Kin Folklore, where we have gone through a portal and returned to the world of His Dark Materials for Season 3 of the BBC HBO series based on the novels written by Philip Pullman. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andrea. In this episode, we're consulting our alethiometers about episodes 1 and 2 of the final season of His Dark Materials titled The Enchanted Sleeper. We'll summarize the episodes, talk a bit about our observations, and discuss some of the themes, and look through the Amber Spyglass for some background. Each week, HBO will be releasing 2 episodes, and we will be bringing you coverage of those episodes in this feed each Thursday. We will also be discussing some of the differences from the original trilogy of books, but we will not be spoiling future episodes of the show.
Kin Folklore will have adult content. So if you want all the taste of Sir Crispy from House of the Dragon, but none of the calories, you'll enjoy Father Gomez and his desperate need of an Allison Hightower in his life. Let's go.
Oh, man. Sir Crispy.
He's like off-brand Sir Crispy, Father Gomez.
He really is. He's a little... Actually, no. They're the same level psychopath. I was going to give him a pass, but I was like, nah.
Nah. Oh, my gosh. All right,
so we're going to be moving through this summary for these two episodes by storyline rather than in order of events, mainly because these episodes are packaged together like almost a movie. Mm-hmm. But before we do that, I just wanted to take some time and talk about what happened last season because it's been 2 years.
It's been a minute.
It's been a while. I even forgot some things. So last season, we learned that Lyra Silvertongue, formerly known as Lyra Belacqua, is believed to be the child of the prophecy. And we learned about the prophecy in season 1 from Serapina Pecola's demon, Kaiza, a child who is destined to bring the end of destiny. If told what she will do, she will fail, but she won't walk alone. There's a boy whose fate is bound with hers. Together they will change everything. This prophecy refers to Lyra as Eve, the mother of us all, and the mother of all sin, depending on who you ask. Mm-hmm. The boy in the prophecy is Will Parry, a young man who crossed into another world looking for his father, but instead found Lyra and the subtle knife. The knife can cut through the fabric of reality. So he can create windows into other worlds. This is a broad multiverse. We don't even know how many worlds there are.
It like makes Doctor Strange intimidated. Like he doesn't even know.
Yeah. And there's a lot of worlds in this multiverse. At the end of the season, that's season 2, Lyra is kidnapped by her mother, Mrs. Coulter, or as we affectionately have called her, Coulty.
Coulty.
And her father, Lord Asriel, who remains garbage.
Terrible.
Throughout this whole season. Puts out this call to all of these angels to join his fight against the Authority. Now, the Authority is a godlike figure in this world, or worlds, I should say. And so at the end of last season, Lord Asriel asked for angels to join his battle. And that's where we left off in season 2.
And they all followed him, even though he's a failure as a man and a failure as a father.
I was wondering when we would get our first failure as a man and failure as a father.
Oh, so let's talk about storylines here with what's happening in this season. So we start off with Will. He starts the episode looking for Lyra. He travels through several worlds to find her and is unsuccessful until he gets the help of 2 angels, Baruch and Balthamos, who are able to track Lyra using the alethiometer. On their way to Lyra, he meets Yorick Bjornason, who sails with him to rescue Lyra from her mother. Will is not the only person seeking Lyra and Mrs. Coulter. At the Magisterium, Father MacPhail and his new henchmen...
Pardon. This is my mistake. It's Father President now.
Father President MacPhail. Yes, you know, like he added titles every few seconds, you know?
Titles.
So many of them. He's got a new henchman. He's got a little minion. He lost Boreal. He lost everybody. Mrs. Coulter is out here in these streets, like, hiding from him. He's enlisted this guy, Father Gomez. He was, like, recruiting henchmen, too. He went through, like, 3 of them looking around. Like, which one am I going to choose, all right? He picks Father Gomez because he says the most heinous shit. And he's like, that's mm-hmm. my guy. That's the one. Mm-hmm. And he's employed some, you know, unconventional methods to discover the location of Lyra, who the Magisterium believes to be Eve, the mother of all sin, and Mrs. Coulter.
So let's check in with Azrael. When we last saw Azrael, he was gathering his forces to fight the Authority. At the beginning of this episode, we find him seeking more allies by traveling to a new world in his intention craft. And we'll talk a little bit about the craft later. Mm-hmm. And liberating Commander Ogunwe from a prison in a world where their version of the Magisterium is the oppressive temple. Mm-hmm. Azrael also has the support of the Galavesvians. And we'll talk more about them later as well. And some of the angels who were thrown out of the Kingdom of Heaven. Commander Ogunwe is reluctant to join Azrael, but once he opens the portal to a new world, he's pretty shook, and he's like, yeah, okay, I'll come with you.
Because he's like, yo, bro, you crazy. You talking all this crazy shit. Like, show me something. I like he's from the show me state. He was like, I don't believe none of this you're talking about. Until he opens the portal, then he's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, right. He's basically like, fake news. Let me see this portal. When they arrive back at Azrael's camp, Azrael's informed by his agent in the Magisterium that, you know, they believe that Lyra is in danger, which Azrael dismisses.
As if zero fucks. This guy is the worst. He's the worst.
He's terrible. He's like, she'll be aight.
She'll be aight. It's like, cool. My work here is too important. If my kid dies, she dies. I gotta fix this intention craft and like make sure that I'm ready for the Authority. Like, wow. Fucking terrible.
It's really bad. It's like worse than I could imagine. He's just kind of like, she'll be okay.
It's like everyone is special on steroids, right? Like, it's crazy.
Even Stelmaria, his demon, is like, bruh. Maybe there's something to this Lyra is special thing that, you know, we've been hearing since episode one of season one.
Yeah, exactly.
But before she can really challenge him, two angels fight in the sky above the camp. One is Baruch, who has come to tell Azrael about Will and the knife, and he's killed in the process. With his last words, he tells Azrael that Will is heading towards Lyra. So now suddenly, you know, Lyra's important again.
I don't know why when you said the knife, even though we've been saying it forever, I thought about the golden child and I just heard, I want the knife. I just like heard Eddie Murphy in my head. It's crazy. So let's talk about Lyra and Mrs. Coulter and what they're doing, right? So for months since we last saw them in episode two, Lyra has been kept asleep by her mother with some kind of sleeping potion. In her dreams, she's in this strange world, alone, without Pan, and she sees and hears her friend Roger calling to her. She learns that this world is actually the land of the dead. Once Will arrives with Yorick and Balthamos, they find Lyra and Culty with the help of a little girl named Amma. Will initially tells Mrs. Coulter that he just wanted to check on Lyra, but since she's in the care of her mother, he will go to Azrael with the knife as his father told him. While Will is devising a plan to free Lyra, the Magisterium arrive with their forces, and Mrs. Coulter manages to subdue Father Gomez. Meanwhile, Balthamos decides not to get involved in human affairs and leaves. Will cuts into the house from another world, but just as he's trying to cut a door in for him and Lyra, Mrs. Coulter speaks to him about his mother, and the knife shatters. Lucky for him and Lyra, one of Azrael's spies, a Galavespian named Salmakia, stings Mrs. Coulter and helps the children escape. Outside the cave, a battle is taking place with Yorick fighting the Magisterium. He's wrecking
all by himself. Let me just say, all by himself. He's just like, man, Yorick is that guy. Like,
yeah, he really is.
Armor either, right? Isn't he like naked?
No armor. I was worried for him with the armor. He's like, bullets, smullets, let's go. I'm about to just wreck people. He was like, yeah, he started wrecking them. There was
again, these Magisterian troops are trash.
Like, they're about as effective as stormtroopers.
Yeah, like Amma takes one out almost. Like, it's not, she's a little girl. Come on.
Yeah. Like the running joke in all Star Wars lore is that stormtroopers have the worst aim. They're terrible fighters. They're just like a mass army that does absolutely the worst shit. They can't hit anybody. And this is just like the Magisterium to me. Like it's nothing. Like nothing. Like they're worse. They're neck and neck.
And I guess that little speech that Father President McVale gave them didn't do nothing. Because they're just weak.
First of all, that's just the worst name, Father President. Like, what are you? God, yeah, he's not inspiring loyalty, and he did nothing. And Gomez is ineffective, also. So we'll see how that goes. So the Magisterian forces are getting wrecked, and Will and Lyra escape through an open portal. So Machia sneaks through just as the portal is closing. So before we get into our thoughts on all that we've just summarized, let's take a moment and pour one out for a real one.
Mm-hmm. This goes out to Baruch. All our fallen yeah. homes.
Yep. Oh, I blow liquor.
Really sad. Really, really sad.
Don't let the gin get like that, y'all.
So how do we like this first episode? Or first two episodes?
It was a lot. Yeah. It was really overwhelming. I think we both... Actually, I don't want to speak for you. I'll speak for myself. I was, had kind of disconnected from the story a bit because it'd been so long. And yeah. Read the book right before the season started and really was like, oh, okay, I get it now. I'm back in. And then started this episode and was like, wait a sec. It felt really jarring. They just assumed that everyone did a rewatch.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying.
They just assumed that in the 2 years, y'all, everybody was sitting at home, you know, still in quarantine, and just went ahead and did a rewatch. It's a lot. I like a lot of it. The production value is phenomenal. The acting, of course, is really great. And it's a great, like, I think they do set up some of the larger questions of the show, but it was just, I felt very, very disoriented by the first two episodes when I first watched them.
Yeah. What I liked is exactly what you said. The production value and the acting helped me to settle in, right? Like I was like, oh, cause I didn't do a rewatch when I started. I just like started watching. Right. And I'm like, okay, I'm settling into this world, but wait a second, have I met Commander Gunway before? And I'm like sitting here like freaking, my Google search was flamed. I was like, who is this? Like, who is that? Wait, Ruta Scotty's here all of a sudden? Like, where did she come in? Like, how did she get over to Azrael's camp? It was nuts. Like, there was like so many things I was just expected to remember. Baruch and Balthamos just show up. I'm like, these folks weren't here. Luckily, I had read the first, these chapters in the book, so I knew that they were going to be there. But if you freshly went into this season, I almost shudder to say this because I want you guys to listen to everything. But if you haven't read the book recently or rewatched, I would do a light rewatch or reading of the book while you're going along with the series. Because to me, it's really like valuable to go back and do it. You can still enjoy the production value and the acting and you'll fall into it. I felt like I fell into it like by episode two, you know, like this first episode, like the second half of it. I was like, okay, I'm in the story again. But I do feel like you said, it took a while to get back oriented to the world and everything else.
So. Yeah, and if folks don't want to rewatch season two, because I only rewatched season one in advance of this. I didn't have time to rewatch season two. I actually went back and listened to our episodes and it reminded me of some of the plot points that I had forgotten. I don't know why, but this just felt like such a longer time between shows. And there are other shows that have been gone for 2 years and come back, but I think because the story is really complex and there's a lot of characters, I think you do need to do the rewatch, the re-listen to, you know, whatever your favorite podcast is. I think I hope it's ours. Or at least read some of the articles that are like, hey, here's what you need to remember, because it is a bit jarring.
Yeah, and I think part of it is that I felt like it kind of ended in an abrupt place last season. And I think obviously we know it's because of shooting and the pandemic coming and them having to cut the, like, they didn't even, I think there wasn't a full, they took things out that they had shot because it didn't work.
Yeah. So they had to, they had initially planned an entire episode that was just about Asriel getting his allies together, mm-hmm. and that never happened. So there were only 7 episodes last season when there should have been 8. So I think that's part of the reason we're a little thrown in with the Gallivesmians, the Angels, you know, the Commander Ogunway, Brutus Scotty. Like, there was just, I think they had to shorthand some of that. And to be honest with y'all, like, none of that's in, like, a lot of it's not in the book. Like, yeah. They just kind of throw you in with those characters as well. So, yeah, I think if you want to feel grounded, you got to do a little homework.
Yeah, what I was struck by, I agree. What I was struck by, though, is I actually think what's going to be interesting, and that's why the another approach that I would take is, like, just watch the season, and then if you really love this story, go back to the beginning and binge it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I honestly think this is going to be a great piece like of like, you know, fantasy for television if you just watch it all the way through, like because there were breaks in between and we had these stops and starts, I honestly think that the start to the finish of like a binge would make a lot more sense, and because like, you have less time in between, so the story would kind of like weave together in a more seamless way. And I think it's gonna be I think over time we'll appreciate this series more and more and more, because I think like there was, what I loved about this season is it felt like, okay, we know this is their last season. We know they're wrapping up after they had those, that like kind of rough patch in the middle with the pandemic and everything. The first season didn't get a whole lot of love in the United States. Probably, we talked about this offline, you and me, Andrew, like more love in like the UK and over there in the BBC, in like where the BBC is. But they didn't skimp on putting everything they had from production value, acting, and finishing out the story in this season. And I really love that. You know what I mean?
Oh, so. Absolutely. I've thought a lot about this. I've seen all but the finale at this point. They went for it.
Yeah.
They went all in and they nailed it, in my opinion. There are big changes from the book and from the books at large, but a lot of them are great. And they just really, you know, they translated this story that is really complex and somewhat chaotic at the end into the language of television in a way that I think HBO, BBC, they should be really proud of this work. I thought they did a good job.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, let's talk about some of what's happening in the story here. One person I really, really want to, you know, talk about, because she's one of my favorites. I mean, Ruth Wilson, cheese, man. Like, Mrs. Coulter, it's like super clear that she really is starting to turn the corner here, even though we didn't have that clarity at the end of last season, that she's trying to save Lyra, that she really wants to keep her safe from harm, but she can't see how to do it other than keep her kind of like isolated. That's kind of like her idea of what to do. She gets, I think that Lyra hates her, and that's why she doesn't, you know, she's trying to like figure that out as well. But it doesn't stop her from taking Lyra to like against her free will. Like, so what do you think about Mrs. Coulter in this whole scenario?
I mean, Mrs. Coulter, in my opinion, is just as much a star of this season as Lyra is. Her story is woven really beautifully throughout the whole series, but I feel that this last season, you start to understand why she made some of the decisions she made earlier. You don't agree with them, certainly, but mm-hmm. In a lot of ways she plays as a victim of the Magisterium, of the authority, of this whole thing that Asriel is trying to pull apart. And I felt for her. I know it's strange to say. I felt for her when Lyra tries to escape and she does try to explain to her, this is why I'm doing this. And like, obviously Lyra doesn't believe her, because why would she?
Mm-hmm.
But I felt that frustration. Like when she was talking to Will and she's like, This is the best I can do to keep her safe. Will's right. This is not the right way to lock her up. But like, you can also understand that she feels like, what other choice do I have? She won't stay with me. I need to keep her safe. I don't know what else to do. And Mrs. Coulter's never had that parenting experience. So she doesn't really like have the same connection with Lyra that a mother traditionally would. So it's hard to watch her try so hard to save Lyra, to help her, and still be rejected, but she entirely earned it.
Yeah, she earned it. And it's the double entendre that, you know, of her nickname that we gave her, Culty, right? It's like classic behavior of a person who's been indoctrinated by like a cult. Like, this magisterium is kind of like, hey, this is the way things are. She's kind of freed herself in some ways, but she can't figure out a way. She's still worried about the magisterium trying to kill her daughter. Like, she's like, yo, so she's like freed herself on some levels, but on some level she's still in bondage and can't figure out how to actually navigate this in a way, because she still sees them as very powerful. So in some ways I have a lot of compassion for that, just because I still think that she's kind of like, she's herself a victim of the oppression of this institution. And so she can't think of, and she thinks they're all powerful still in some ways, even though she's been able to manipulate it in some ways. Mm-hmm. And so there's a real fear, a genuine fear that she has of like, if they find her, they will kill her, you know? And that is why I think she's hiding her. You know what I mean? So she does tell the golden monkey that she's thought he would be here by now. Who do you think she's talking about? You think Will or Asriel? Like, what do you think?
I think it was Asriel. This one was tricky for me, because when Will arrives, she says, I didn't think you would be the first to come.
Yeah.
So I think she's kind of been thinking, okay, Asriel's going to show up at some point, and at least we'll have his protection. And Asriel does show up, but not until it's too late.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of going with Asriel too on this. I think that's who she's waiting for. Like, it doesn't make much sense for it to be anybody else. You know what I mean? Like, so.
Yeah, when I heard it initially, I thought it was Will.
Me too. Yeah.
Because she knows Will is devoted to Lyra. She read that on them immediately. Mm-hmm. Like, immediately when she met Will for the first time, she's like, okay, this is like, this boy has a thing for my daughter. He's going to protect her.
Also highly relatable that she's shading him because of this. Also highly relatable. Okay,
continue. She is quite shady to him later. But then when Will shows up and she's kind of surprised that he got there first, I think she's like relieved, but also disappointed that Asriel didn't get there first. But then I also wondered, well, why didn't you send for Asriel?
Because maybe she's afraid that she'll be found out. She, again, that fear of like the magisterium being all seen, all powerful, knowing everything. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's so funny to watch them and Asriel not really like they're not even acknowledging each other. Mm-hmm. But like, mm-hmm. the threat to the magisterium is actually not just like, it's Asriel who's amassing a freaking army that's actually skilled, unlike theirs.
Yeah.
And agreed. They're obsessed with this little girl. And the threat to the authority is actually, you know, probably Lyra and Will. And Asriel is like obsessed with amassing the army. It's like very amusing to watch it.
Everybody's like focused on the wrong shit, but exactly. Somehow it's moving. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And it happens to work out in this episode that like Asriel wanting the knife is actually what saves Will and Lyra, because Selmakia is there, but she's not there for Lyra. She's not there for Mrs. Coulter. She doesn't care about that. She cares about the knife. So it's very fascinating.
I mean, it's kind of like being super, it's kind of like the magisterium has like, you know, super uninformed, ignorant ideas. Maybe it's because they're punishing people for reading books. Maybe that's the problem. They're like, hey, you know what? Like, stop reading. And also, Frau Pavel, read that fucking alethiometer super fast. Like, please hurry up.
I laughed so hard at all the Magisterium scenes because I'm like, here they are doing the same shady shit they've been doing since season one. Like, everyone has changed a little bit, either their tactics or their worldview, and the Magisterium still punishing people for reading and still going on about heresy. Like, I was like, it's, why are we doing this? And still bullying Fra Pavel.
Yo.
Like, I don't, it's too funny. Like, they're still doing the same stuff, but I will say this. Something worked with Fra Pavel because all of a sudden he getting answers.
Yo, Retty is like doing things a little bit slow on purpose, I think. I think he's like, nah, I'm gonna stall him out. You know what I mean? Like, I'm
yeah,
stalling him
out.
Yeah,
I wondered that too. I was like, actually, all this time, has he just been lying?
Yeah, I think so. I think Retty's, but it's really difficult to read. I don't know how it works. Boreal was up to that, up to his, knew what was going on. You know what I mean? He was like laying, he was like, yo, get this shit done. But again, now we got Father Gomez, like another psychopath bringing on like the real pressure on freaking Fra Pavel at Father McPhail's bidding. Talk about, please give me the honor of going in and speaking to him. And what? I don't like this guy.
Gomez is terrifying.
Terrifying.
In the book, I didn't read him as scary. I read him more as kind of like shady and like a little bit incompetent because he's not successful all the time. But yeah. He scares the crap out. Like, immediately I was like, this guy is a psychopath and is terrifying and very much reminds me of Sir Criston Cole.
Yeah, 100%. When is he going to beat somebody up at a wedding? What's going to happen?
For no reason.
Right? Oh my goodness. And another person who's doing things that he thinks has a reason, but may find out later that his reasons are flawed. Let's talk about Sir Asriel.
I'm sighing because this, talk about not having any character development whatsoever.
Yeah.
This is our third season on this show, and Asriel started in the very first episode being a complete piece of shit, and here we are, you know, like almost 20 episodes later, still a complete piece of shit. Like, the fact that he's so dismissive when his spies are telling him, hey, we just learned that the Magisterium is getting troops together to go and murder your child. He's like, pish posh, anyway.
Yeah, unfortunate. It's unfortunate. Like, if an institution that important is like, yo, we got to murk this person, you don't think you're just like, maybe this is... He, like, literally is like, there's no way that she can be Eve. Like, whatever. Like, it's not a thing.
Lyra is 13.
Yeah.
Like... Yes, Daphne Keene and Amir look older.
Yeah.
But Lyra, it's only been a year since the story started. Lyra is 13 years old. And this guy is still like, she doesn't really need my protection. She'll be fine. And Stel Maria is like the only thing that makes, because she is concerned. She's like, you're too dismissive. Your daughter. Like, there must be something to this. But also she calls him on it. Like, I want the truth. Like, you're pretending you don't care, but like, what is actually the truth? I wish that conversation had actually been a little bit longer, because I felt like there was a chance that we were going to get a breakthrough of Asriel being like, actually, I do care, but like, I haven't been a good parent to her, and all the things I've tried to do to protect her have, you know, she's always worked against them. Like, if she had just stayed at Jordan College, where I told her to stay, maybe none of this would have happened. But it gets interrupted by this battle between Baruch and this archangel.
Yeah, and I think it's fun. It's fascinating because we know that Stelmaria is his soul, right? So he's having this internal conflict, right? I need to know the truth. Like, that's actually, like, you know, he's having this conflict internally. Like, I need to know, like, what is going on? But he's outwardly trying to demonstrate that he's not to everybody else. But it's super clear that he's conflicted, if you look at it from that vantage point. But it just seems like, you know, they nailed him. He's failure as a man, failure as a father. They just nailed him. Like, what a fucking, like, if one person that's just savagely does something, it's like, that should be, like, a pin on Mrs. Coulter's Twitter feed. Like, it's just like, failure as a man, failure as a father, Lord Adriel. You know what I mean? Like, that's what it is.
Oh, man. Yeah, I just, he's such a frustrating character because he's, in a way, he's a hero to all of these new characters that were, you know, that we'll talk about in a bit, who are his allies. But we just know him as someone who has time and time again been so single-minded that he, one, doesn't care about the harm that he creates in the world. Like, he doesn't even care about the fact that all of this technology that he's using was built based on the fact that he murdered Roger.
Yeah. And the odd thing is, right, that there's things that we won't say in this episode that we'll talk about later, that you could have another view of him, as much as I don't like him, and I don't. You could have another view of him based on the fact that he's so fucking clueless that he actually sets in motion things that actually fulfill a lot of things that need to happen, right? Like, him doing the shit that he's doing. The problem is that he's doing it because he thinks he's the one. Like, he's like, I gotta do it. I'm the one. And he's driven by ego and pride and this idea of, like, what it is versus, like, the fact. So that thing is, like, he's actually just a puppet. His strings are being pulled, like just like everybody else, by somebody who we don't see until way later. But that's a whole other story for a whole other time.
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't know. Asriel, when I saw the trailer for the season, I was immediately alarmed at how, you know, Asriel looked like he was going to be a hero. And while he does heroic things, he is most definitely not a hero in this story. And so I really struggled with this whole season with Asriel because everyone has so much faith in him. And I do like the fact that when they challenge him, it is about Lyra. You know, they, for the most part, you know, there's a couple other issues that come up. But for the most part, when folks are like, dude, like, why are you acting this way? Why don't you care about your child? You know, I think that that's a understandable point of view for his allies. But yeah, I just, Asriel's pretty awful throughout this entire experience. Not much change. I mean, he will do some things that I think, nothing will redeem the fact that he killed Roger, in my opinion. I'm going to stay mad about that till I
forever.
Die.
Forever. Like, it's on sight every single time. Like, you know, terrible.
And 100%. Also, like, you know, just going back to season two, we know that in addition to having killed, you know, Roger to create the hole in the sky that he created, in addition to that, he also created such disruption that, like, Yurik's people are starving.
Yeah.
And so there's just, he doesn't even seem to care about any of that, because the only thing that matters is this fight, his personal fight with the authority.
Yeah, I mean, what he did to Roger, Yurik's people starving, and he's, you know, opening that portal. Also, obviously, Lyra meets Will and all this other stuff, but that's arguably, it's dangerous, right? Because these worlds coming together in this way, it's like Mary is now thrusted into this as well, right? We're using the I Ching to navigate through worlds and figuring out what dust is and what her dark matter is. And all. So there's, like, things that he set into motion, like I said, just purely out of his own ambition. Like, we're talking about that, like, he's unconcerned about the collateral damage.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
I do like that he designed, like, warp speed, and, like, you know, somehow, like, created some sort of traveling mechanism with the intention craft. Like, it feels like, you know, it's powered by dust and demons. It's controlled by your mind. If you have a clear mind. You know, I really like that he created this tech. Like, it's cool tech. It's like, you know.
Shit. And it's based on Mrs. Coulter's research.
Yeah. Based on Mrs. Coulter's research, which is wild. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, for sure. She never gets the credit she deserves as a scientist. Can we just say that?
Yeah. No, she definitely. And this is one of the things that she was pretty upset about last season, right? I mean, I think this was a real schism between her and Boreal, was he's out here trying to get wealthy and just explore the world. And she's like, no, I'm doing like real shit. And yeah. her technology is all throughout the entire season, but particularly important is the intention crafts, which allow them to portal into other worlds.
Yep.
Which is pretty dope.
It's crazy. It's super duper crazy. Like, and really
dope. Azrael has figured out how to do that without, you know, without severing his connection to Stel Maria. Like, he, when he blows open the portal for Ogunwe, him and Stel Maria are part of that process. Like, it harnesses both their connection, but they're still connected.
Yep.
So it's that's pretty dope. The intention craft was one of the coolest things that I like saw in this whole season. It was really great.
I agree. I got a question for you though, about before we move on from Azrael.
Mm-hmm.
What does he mean when he's in, you know, full of confidence and describing saying death is a lie? What do you think he's talking about?
I don't understand this. Okay, so one weakness of this episode particularly, in my opinion, is like people have information that I'm like, why does Azrael think death is a lie? Does he think that, like, I guess I wondered, does Azrael think that as soon as the authority is abolished, like, humans will become immortal? Because that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I think it's explained later, right? We won't talk about why. We'll talk later on. This, like, we'll put a pin in it for a later episode. But I do think that it doesn't make sense in this moment for him to have this understanding. Like, right? Like it, to me, I was a little, like, at this point in watching, I was like a little confused. Other than what you're saying, that maybe he thinks that by defeating the authority that death will just cease to be a thing, right? Like, by winning this war that we won't have to talk about death. And that would be referenced, that would be a reference to the biblical text in one way of, like, with Adam and Eve, it was the eating of the fruit that actually led to the knowledge of life and death and all those things. So, like, he could be referencing that all of this was created as a way to kind of, like, it convinced people that they die, but they really don't die when they actually leave the living plane. So that could be what he's referencing, that whole, like, thing that maybe the magisterium has probably been pushing, that, like, you know the knowledge of life and death, of old age, of health ailments, because apparently, you know, in the text in Eden, that wasn't a thing. So maybe that's it, but it's not clear. He doesn't say why, in my opinion.
Yeah, he just has, in a good way, challenges him. He's like, bruh, I have been in war. I have seen people die. Like, what are you talking about? And I guess my question is, okay, so even if he believes that, like, the authority is the one who created death, there's a lot of magic in this world that is unexplained. Why does he think it can be undone?
Yeah.
And really? So I thought this was, like, kind of a weird line. I think it was there more to provoke than it was, you know, as a plot piece. But, like, I don't know. I don't know what he meant by that. It's just weird. I feel like they could have explained it, what he meant, when Ogunwe said, no, I know what death is.
Yeah, and then he could have said something after. I agree with you. I mean, I feel like, and again, we'll put a pin in this because I don't want to spoil anyone who hasn't seen further than these episodes. You know, I think that the series actually explains what he's talking about later. And when we get there, we'll talk about it. But I don't think he should know that as a character in the story.
So speaking of Ogunwe, we should just talk about some of the new characters in the story. So we separate them out. Let's look at Azrael's allies first. So we've been talking about Commander Ogunwe this whole time. But what I found interesting about Ogunwe is that he's from a world where the authority is represented by the temple. And the temple is basically using a process similar to intercision on children to eliminate dust. And they are very technologically advanced because they got drones. I was like, the Magisterium ain't got no drones.
No drones. They got, like, that Goodyear blimps. That's it. That's what they got. It's weird.
And so I found this fascinating because, one, it gives a good way, like, a reason to get behind Asriel. Like a very clear, okay, his daughter has also had her demon severed, even though in their world, the demons live within. They're not, you know, animals the way that they are in Lyra's world. And secondly, it just lets us know that, like, the authority has figured out how to put institutions into every world that, you know, for, like, push through its agenda, which is, like, to eliminate any kind of research, keep people in the dark, all of that has, and Asriel says that to him. So I think Ogunway is going to be a really important part of the story. He's a really big, big player in the conflict to come in the book. And so that's, you know, Asriel's, like, big ally that's a human. You know, most of Asriel's other allies are magical in some way. So then we also have Roke and Selmakia, who are Galavespians. And we'll talk more about the Galavespians next episode because they play a larger role in that one. But as you can see, they are very small humans who can fly and also have, you know, some ability to sting people. Zephenia is an angel who... I don't think we get a lot of information about her in this particular episode, but she is one of the angels that was cast out of heaven for questioning the authority. And so I think that it's really important to just realize that, like, if we go back to, I think it was episode 3 of season 2 or episode 2, when we meet Mary Malone, she gets this she has this conversation with the computer, and the computer speaks back to her and says, you know, we are angels and that they're out for vengeance. And so I think that we're supposed to understand that this is one of those angels that was cast out and is out for vengeance.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's yeah, because we don't, and again, it's gonna be one of the things that kind of, like, we missed in season 2 because of that episode, you know, right? That had to get, that didn't happen. But yeah, I agree. Like, with all, like, the gathering of his allies are pretty fascinating. I also love that Ogunway is like, yo, dude, what, he shows him his other thing. It's like, you know, one of the children that they eliminated dust from is his daughter. So, like, it's kind of sets up an interesting dynamic, his love of his daughters and the fact that he's not willing to risk anything that would hurt them. And he's really questions Asriel quite a bit here with, like, man, you're not even bothered a little bit about your daughter's safety? Okay. Like, that's wild. You know what I mean? Like, so I think that's pretty interesting too. And then we have Will's allies, right? Will and Lyra's allies, which we spoke about a little bit, Baruch and Balthamos. I love them too.
I love really them. Do. First of all, can we just say Philip Pullman really wrote two gay angels into this story? Just incredible. And also, they're just like, either they don't get a lot of screen time together, but their bond is undeniable.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, obviously, in the parts I've read of the book, there's a little bit more about them, but yeah, the screen time isn't much, but you still feel it, you know, like the connection, and especially as he dies, and you see, you know, as Baruch dies, and you see Balthamos, like, just shattered, you know, like, that moment, and he blames Will for a minute, he's upset, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it was a really, I mean... Balthamos can be frustrating at times, but I understood this. He's been with Baruch for millennia. This is his life partner. I mean, they're immortal. Yeah. So I can't even say his life partner, more than life.
Yeah.
It's really awful. And his grief is undeniable. And I also just really love Will's response.
Yeah.
Will is so, being a person who has recently experienced grief, too, he's so understanding and so measured, but he still wants Balfamos to stay with him.
Yeah, I agree. It was a great response. It was really, really great. And then I also think their other ally, Alma, right? I you know, in the I'm pretty sure in the book, she's able to speak and also able to hear. So it was really amazing. I thought that they actually made her use sign language throughout the beginning of the series, and it was awesome. I thought it was like really, really awesome. I love her character as a whole. That really stood out because I remembered, I mean, it's harder. It's you know, they didn't really write it that way in the book, but I loved that change. And then I also loved like just her character of like wanting to make sure Lyra was safe and wanted to like suss out whether this was like something that, you know, Mrs. Coulter was doing to, you know, on the up and up. And it was, you know, it was really cool. She's a good character.
She's like devoted to Lyra immediately and she never even speaks to her.
Yeah.
And I love that she's a little problem solver. Like when Will and Balthamos come upon her, she's collecting a herb to wake Lyra up. Like she's doesn't buy that Lyra's can't be woken up and she doesn't trust Mrs. Coulter. And so she's already coming up with her own plan to try to liberate Lyra. She's a very brave little girl.
Yeah, I agree. I love it. I love it. I love all these characters. It's a good, good like introduction to get us right back in, like we talked about. And let's look at some of the backdrop on this. And now, after 2 years of not doing it, let's take a look through the amber spyglass.
All right, so I think we should start with talking about the authority.
Let's do it.
I went and looked through. We had not previously done an amber spyglass just on the authority, and the authority kind of gets thrown around a lot in this episode and in future episodes. And we learned a lot in this particular episode. So I want to talk first about the voiceover from the top of the episode, which is narrated by an angel. I think it's Zephania. For many millennia, the authority has ruled in the kingdom of heaven with absolute control. He named himself the creator, the father, the almighty. He is none of those, but just an angel like ourselves. He rules with a dark angel by his side. We who fought for the truth were cast out of the kingdom. Since then, we have lived between the worlds, watching and waiting for vengeance. A spark of hope is alive amongst humankind. A bold leader is rallying mortals. He may be mortal, but his ambitions transcend his kind. A serpent has been summoned. A new Eve emerges. The time for a new rebellion is coming. So what we learn here is that the authority is an angel, not the creator, not the almighty. He's just like Balthamos and Baruch, except, you know, older and more powerful. Mm-hmm. In Azrael's conversation with the captured angel, we learn that the authority's not even ruling anymore. That he has appointed a regent, Metatron, who is also known as Enoch, the brother of Baruch. Metatron wants to end the rebellion against the authority's power. The archangel who Azrael tortures tells him that conscious beings become dangerously independent and he will lead a permanent inquisition into every world on every being until they understand complete obedience. What we've basically learned in this episode is the authority is a lie. He created nothing, but he and his regent exercise absolute power over all of the worlds. And that really underpins Azrael's obsession over it, that this is actually a force that they can challenge. It's not the you know, deity that can change everything because he created it all. He was created too. Something created him. So You know, I think that this is the first time the show has really been clear about what the role of the authority is in these worlds.
Here's the question I had that came up before we go into the next thing in the Amber Spyglass, which is going to talk about angels, since these are all angels. The new rebellion, a time for a new rebellion is coming. Is that an insinuation then that the original origin story, the Eve story that happened previously that they talk about, was actually like a failed rebellion?
Could be. Yeah. I mean, we know that this story is based and inspired by Paradise Lost. I think, yes, we absolutely can assume that the angels were intervening at some point to, you know, lure humankind away from the authority. And perhaps Eve was, you know, the weapon that they used.
See, I dig it. All right, so angels, let's talk about them, because we're talking about all these folks are angels that are fighting this war. Metatron, Baruch, the authority. In this episode, we learn about angels as well. We're first introduced to the idea of angels when Mary Malone spoke to them using her dark matter machine in the cave in episode 2 of season 2. Angels are composed of dust. They have senses and abilities that humans do not, but can appear in human form. There are also groups of angels that we're aware of, those faithful to the authority, and those who are cast out of the kingdom of heaven, as we just discussed. They're able to travel between worlds and find anything that dust is attracted to. As Ruta tells Ogunwe, they live long lives, but can die, as we saw Baruch in this episode. They can also travel without being seen, which is pretty cool. The rebellious angels have been waiting to get their revenge on the authority for many millennia, which is the reason that they've meddled in different human affairs from time to time. And the angels are of the rebellion sent Mary into this other world. So they've, you know, as we've spoken about throughout this episode, kind of like they called Mary to action to come into their conflict.
Yeah. And I also just think, one, as you were saying at the beginning of this episode, this is going to make a great rewatch of the whole series, mm-hmm. because Kaiza refers to angels in his, when he's talking about the prophecy, mm-hmm. he says, witches hear the whispers of immortal beings. The immortal beings are angels. And we know this because Ruta basically says that she catches a lot of her information in between worlds, listen, you know, traveling and listening to the whispers of the immortal beings, which are angels.
I love it.
Great stuff. So this episode's theme was alliances, just like the first episode of last season's theme mm-hmm. was alliances. We are seeing alliances grow and change. As Azrael's alliances grow, they are not without concern. Ogunwe, Rudiscati, Roke, Zephania, they all seem wary of his decisions, but they choose to follow him because they believe in his mission. Ogunwe appears distrustful because Azrael would use Lyra as bait in order to get the knife. Zephania is distrustful because of the method he uses to torture one of her kind. War often makes uncomfortable bedfellows, but alliances are more important than any artillery or manpower. For Lyra and Will, old alliances are as important as the new. They have each other and Yurik, and unbeknownst to them, they have Mary mm-hmm. in another world trying to make her way to them. This puts them in a strong position to move through the world during this time of upheaval. Mrs. Coulter finds herself for the first time without any allies at all. She murdered Boreal in the last season. She was justified. I have no problem with that. I have no problem with it. But she killed her only ally, and the Magisterium, which was once her biggest ally, is against her. They're looking for her to mm-hmm. arrest her. She's finding it harder and harder to navigate the world in conflict without the help of others, but she's made so many enemies along the way. It's possible she'll have to figure out and forge the way on her own. So
yeah,
yeah, I think that this is going to be a rocky season for a lot of folks, but particularly for Mrs. Coulter.
Yeah, and I love the theme of alliances just based on, you know, everybody's like clicking up. You can see it, right? Like there's even Mary, right? So like it's really cool. All this stuff is really cool. So.
Yeah, I mean, even Mary and Lyra have the same ability to make anyone that they meet instantly love them and trust mm-hmm. them. Like, it's really fascinating. But, you know, Mary wasn't in these episodes much, but
no.
She does link up with those two young women who stayed behind in Ogunwe's world, and they immediately care for her and trust her. It's beautiful to see. So she, you know, I don't think Mary's going to spend very long, you know, in any one particular place, but it's good to see that she's so beloved wherever she goes. Like, people see her spirit and her kindness.
Yeah, I dig it. It's a good start. You know, it's a great start to the new season. It you know, it's really one of those things. You know, this is the show that we started this podcast with. So obviously it's near and dear to our hearts to be able to cover it again and to be covering it for the, you know, the series finale. So we're really appreciative of you all listening and being back with us. We're back for another season. It's exciting.
All
and
right.
Yeah, you know, we you know, go ahead and go back and listen to old episodes, leave any sort of feedback, give us, you know, comments, or check us out. Give us you know, hit us up on KinFolklorePod at Instagram, KinFolklorePod on Twitter. Although Twitter is a hot mess right now, still do that. go ahead and hit us up on any of our socials. And then also you can reach out to us at kinfolklore@gmail.com. We will be back to cover episodes 3 and 4 next week. And we'll see you next time.
Bye, everyone.